It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the final hour of the Hoffman Show on a Friday here on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And 6 o'clock, we hit it four times a week, our pick six at six, top Commanders headlines. Today's the Thursday edition, if you will, because we have clips for you from both Joey Jr. and Cliff Kingsbury, everything backed up with Monday Night Football, and let's get right to it.
The six biggest Commander storylines.
It is torn!
Delivered at 6 o'clock sharp. It's the Pick 6 at 6.
We set out to find a leader, someone who could take this franchise to the next level and build an elite team that consistently competes for championships.
If I had a nickel for every time I heard the phrase play style, I'd at least have a couple dollars by now because it's been a big, big thing that Joe Witt Jr. and Dan Quinn have talked about since they got here. And that's where we start with number one.
Number one.
Joe Witt was asked specifically, who are the guys that are playing the way that you want your defense to play?
Frankie Louvu, it starts with him. The way he runs and hits. You know, this last game, I we won it and it was good, but Bobby Wagner, Frankie Louvu, Ben and Quan, I think Quan played really good the first game, even though we didn't play good as a defense. Those four men have been playing the play style, okay? All right, Frankie Louvu runs and hits and puts his body on people in a very violent manner. And we have to get everybody to do that, all right? Quan, you know, the Tampa game, we did not play a good game defensively, but he came out of the post and had some really nice tackles and some space tackles that were hard. So did Percy. They had some space tackles that were hard. Now, we have to get 11 guys doing it every time. And then we talked about playing with a deep crew. When those guys get tired, all right, the next group that come in have to be able to do it. And so, but if you're asking, of plays, you know, Frankie, his whole play style is what we're looking for as a defense from a physicality, run and hit. And I thought Bobby Wagner, I challenged him on some things this past week in the coverage aspect, and he was all over it, man. He played really well this last game. Those two men play really well.
I thought the linebackers were better in week two than they were in week one, and I think there's a lot of growth potential, especially for Louvu, because if he can get the pass rush part of his game going, that'd be great. I think they need it. But that physicality piece, the tone setting, is there. But noticeably absent from that list is anybody up front. Joey Jr. also asked today, as we move on to number two here in our pick six.
Number two.
About the big two, about Duron, about John. Two guys that we've seen play at borderline all pro, but certainly Pro Bowl levels, who seem to be having some level of a hard time adjusting to this new defense and the new play style. So what's going on there, Joey Jr.?
About like the rest of us, you know, we're as a defense, we're not where we need to be. I know everybody wants to get enamored in individual player stats and numbers and all that, but we rush as a collective, we play as a collective, and once we start playing better as a collective, individuals, numbers and all that will increase. But until we as a collective play better, it is going to be what it is with certain people's numbers.
I think, one, the numbers are always going to be a little bit fluctuating for what they're asking John and Duron to do and how they're playing, right? We've talked about this a lot this week. If you had a nickel for every time that I said coverage structures this week, you'd also have a couple of dollars. But realistically, when you play with two safeties high as opposed to an extra guy in the box, then the double teams get to stick a little bit longer. And who's getting double teamed? It's John Allen and Duron Payne. And they're talking about in the run game here. So they're going to have to be super quick off the snap. But when they do that, it's being used against them with draw plays and trap plays and wham plays, things designed to take advantage of a super aggressive defense. And so it really comes down to those guys having a little bit better play recognition, playing with better leverage, understanding what's happening to them quicker, and then using what the tools in their toolbox to get around it, shrinking down gaps, penetrating, you know, and getting where they need to be even faster at times to make sure that they don't take themselves out of the play, but in fact they can make it. And all those things that are the intricacies of D-line play, you know, winning the hand-to-hand combat, making sure that you don't get pushed quite as far, even a yard here, a yard there, helps other players on your team step up. And then you're in a better situation. So, you know, you give up a big or a little run instead of a big run because you did your job on first down of eating a double team more successfully. Now, eventually, you get to a third and long, and now you can go eat as a pass rusher. And that area is where I think they can also grow this group a lot. And I do think there's an opportunity this week for that. Let's get to number three along those lines.
Number three.
Joe Burrow's great. If he has one area of opportunity that I would look at as a defensive coordinator, it's he does have a tendency to hold the ball back there a little bit, something Joe Witt was willing to say out loud today.
I think you have to attack his feet and get him moving. He's comfortable. He can throw when he's in the pocket. When you hit him, he keeps his eyes downfield. He's not a guy that necessarily looks at the rush. So, you know, he's a tough man. So we need to be able to move him off the spot. And then when he does scramble, different than Daniel. Daniel typically scrambles to run. He scrambles to throw, and so his eyes are still downfield. So we have to do a great job on the back end of plastering the coverage, because if we pull up, now that's when the explosive plays come to life.
Something from last week that is worth noting is your rush plan as a team. And they need to do everything better when it comes to team defense, but specifically on a rush plan, has to be much more conservative facing a Daniel Jones than a Joe Burrow. Not because Daniel Jones is better, but because he's a better runner. Flushing Daniel Jones in many ways is a win for Daniel Jones. I want Daniel Jones, if I'm a defensive coordinator, to stay in the pocket and throw and try to beat me from there, because I don't think he's good enough to do it. Joe Burrow standing in the pocket and beating me from the pocket is a death wish. So let's take the risk of flushing him out, getting him on the run, narrowing down the parts of the field that are accessible, because he's not Mahomes. He's not going to throw the ball back across his body 50 yards. He's going to, you know, the more he rushes to his right as he rolls, more of the field becomes off limits to him. And so it's less space you have to cover. And again, it's not that I would prefer to face Daniel Jones than Joe Burrow. It's just a different kind of aggressiveness you can bring to your rush, because it's not as big of a deal if a guy gets out and runs. With that said, it allows a little more freedom. And one of the things that I expect to happen more and more this season, especially as Johnny Newton gets back and especially as Joe Witt Jr. and Dan Quinn get to know Allen and Payne, is I would expect to see them move around a little bit. We saw it the tiniest amount last week on the line, but is that something that's in play? Joe Witt asked about that today. Perhaps, Anthony.
It's taking its time right now.
Oh, I hate when it gets a mind of its own.
Yeah.
Because it happens. It's just, that sounded snarkier than I wanted it to be. It's 6:30 or 6:15 on Friday. I'm a little tired. But no, the computer really does sometimes have a mind of its own. But Anthony has wrestled back control. And thus, Joey Jr. asked about Duron and John moving around on the D-line.
Yeah, we pressured a good bit, and we're going to move guys. People can take one or two guys, well, really one guy away from you with the protection, the way that they want to do it. But like I said, I never said that we're going to come in here and just we're going to have two guys rush. We want to rush as a unit. And so we want to put a wave at them. And we have to do a better job of, if we have a pressure call, don't be selfish at all in any kind of way. Run the pressure, because if you get out of your lane, you're knocking somebody else off. And so just like on the back end, we have to cover as a collective. We have to rush as a collective.
And you can see that happening on tape, too. You can see the, you know, hey, Duron, John, and I don't know who's right or wrong, but you see, like, Duron jumps inside, Luvu jumps outside, and now we got a big rush. You know, we got a muddle on one side that's easy to block, and we got a whole bunch of space on the other side that's an easy escape lane. Or sometimes these pressures were called, and the Giants wound up running the football, and now you have a gigantic lane because these two guys haven't communicated a rush plan together. And this blitz that also might have been kind of a run blitzy type of thing, instead of becoming hard to block for the Giants, became real easy, and you got an explosive play given up. So you got to be really smart with how you execute these things. You have to be really disciplined as a defense and make things hard for an offensive line. And they just didn't really do a great job of that last week. They did a better job in week one and they couldn't finish. So we'll see if they can get back on track here in week three against Cincinnati. When we get back, you'll hear from Cliff Kingsbury on the back half of our pick six, including him answering everyone's favorite question this week. How did he get Terry McLaurin the football more? You got to hear what Cliff said because I thought it was both snarky and good. Next on the Team 980. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And we pick up our pick six at six. We give you the biggest headlines in the Commanders universe each and every day at 6 o'clock. The typical Thursday edition where we hear from the coordinators now moved to Friday with Monday Night Football because, well, the coordinators spoke today. We couldn't give it to you yesterday because Dan Quinn and Jaden Daniels spoke. If you missed that, by the way, and you want to hear what JD and DQ had to say, you can check out the Hoffman Show podcast, or that segment is online on YouTube at Craig Hoffman and at the Team 980. Of course, Jaden Daniels, well, a lot of the questions to Cliff Kingsbury are about him. And I think one of the storylines that's fun to watch for this team is the building of an offense around a young quarterback and how that fits in context with what the rest of the league is doing. And that's where we start the Cliff half of the pick six with number four.
Number four.
And how Cliff thinks that progression is going with Jaden Daniels so far.
Yeah, we'll keep building. The whole year is going to be a learning process and continue to try and play to his strengths and maximize, you know, who we are with our personnel. But I've been really impressed with his operation, like I said, after week one, and protecting the football and making plays when he had to. You know, I thought last week you get a 2-minute drive in that situation to win the game. He went down and won the game after a frustrating day for all of us not getting the end zone. He didn't blink. He was ready in that moment, and that says a lot about who he is as a competitor and what you know, he's going to bring to this organization.
I think that some of the consternation about Jaden not throwing deep more and this offense not being more explosive is ridiculously overblown, if I'm being completely honest. And some of it's coming from people who I like, respect, think are smart, and I totally understand why they're getting it or why they're saying it, because it's not sustainable in the long term. They do need to do more of it. But I do very much think of quarterbacking like almost a video game where you have to beat one level at a time. You can't skip ahead and just be like, give me the final boss. You could. You're probably going to get your ass kicked. So don't do that. Play the level that you're on. And I think Cliff has done a good job of, sure, maybe underselling Jaden a little bit. Maybe he's capable of a little bit more. But I'd rather undershoot than overshoot. And especially if you're 1-1, and especially if you had 12 of 15 drives that ended in either field goal attempts or touchdowns. That's sensational. That is what you want. You got to clean up the finish to make more of those touchdowns. They obviously signed Austin Seibert to make more of those field goals good compared to Cade York in week one, where they were not good. But at the end of the day, I think there are bigger problems on this team than Cliff Kingsbury, even bigger problems with this offense potentially than Cliff Kingsbury's play calling and the conservative nature of it. The screens, I know some of y'all are sick of it. I get it. Is this the optimized version of what this offense can be eventually? No, it'll have less of that. But they serve a purpose to create horizontal space. They serve a purpose to give Jaden easy throws. They serve a purpose to keep the offense on schedule. And they serve a purpose to limit the amount of risk so they're not turning the football over. Because the last part of this that I'll say is it's not just about Jaden. They're also playing a conservative brand of football because their defense is not where they need it to be more aggressive. They can't lean on the fact that their defense is going to go get a stop or turn the football over. And so they need to make sure they keep the ball for 37 minutes if they want to have a chance to win like they did against the Giants. You don't think that has something to do with it? Hey, let's make sure the clock is running. Let's make sure we get completions. Like, let's make sure we're running the football. There's a game management part of this that is coming from the top, and that kind of complementary football is something that, frankly, I think has been missing and certainly was missing last year when you had an offensive coordinator and a defensive coordinator that didn't seem to realize they needed to think about what the other one was doing in order to actually have a chance to win a football game. And, well, they won 4 football games, so that's not good. Meanwhile, the other big story of the week when it comes to the offense.
Number 5.
I'll set it up this way. Hey, Cliff Kingsbury, why isn't Terry McLaurin getting the ball more?
Yeah, I mean, defense coordinators are smart. They're going to try to take him away, there's no doubt. And, you know, that's my job to find ways to answer that
And so far, I haven't done a great job of it. And, you know, as a staff and me, we got to be better moving forward.
Respect on Cliff for saying, like, yeah, I got to do better. Not, it's not a problem. Hey, other guys are getting involved. There's other stuff. I do really appreciate, like, genuinely appreciate the fact that there's not excuses being made. But, Anthony, can you play the first 2-3 seconds of that again for me, please?
Yeah, I mean, defense coordinators are smart. They're
gonna... That's good. Can we cut that, and can I put that on my soundboard? Can I just have defensive coordinators are smart on the soundboard moving forward? Because that is kind of the really funny thing about this, Ant, is, oh, how could Terry's the only guy they got. How come they can't get him the ball? If we all know that, don't you think the defense knows it too? I don't get it sometimes, Anthony. I don't get it. Are you cutting it right now? You saving that little defensive coordinators are smart?
Yeah, I mean, defensive coordinators are smart.
We can even cut it down. Just take
I'm about to shorten it.
Come on, let's get that. Just do a little choppy choppy.
Smart. I mean, defensive coordinators are smart.
That's on the board. On the board. Meanwhile, there is, of course, a balance between getting your star player the ball and making sure your offense is functioning and the ball's going where the coverage dictates and where there are opportunities that aren't just your star player, which Cliff also was asked about that balance today.
Yeah, it's a fine line you walk. Like I said, one of the best things he's done is operate and get the ball to the right spot and take care of it. And so at some point, you know, we got to find a way to get Terry the football. And it really comes down to scheme and me, you know, getting him in the right spots to do that. But I think Jaden has executed the offense, you know, as well. I mean, beyond what we could have anticipated for a rookie in his first two starts against good defenses. It'll come. I'm not worried that connection will get there. It's just, you know, Terry deserves to get the ball. He's like I said, one of the best players in the league, and I got to do a good job getting it to him.
I think what Cliff is struggling there is the balance. And I genuinely appreciate the kind of reality that he operates in or seemingly is operating in, that there is what they want it to be. Because I think it would be really easy for Cliff to say, hey, we've drawn some stuff up. Jaden hasn't necessarily seen it. Defenses have maybe covered some things. Even there's some times where it feels like they lucked into covering it. Guy got out of position, but it was out of position in a way that covered Terry. Like, there's all kinds of things he could say beyond complimenting his quarterback and being like, hey, Jaden realistically has done a good job. And what I think that is acknowledging that some of the touches that he might scheme up for Terry that rely on Jaden getting the ball to him through a progression, he's just got to say, if my point in calling this play is not to call the play against the coverage, but to get Terry a touch, I got to do it differently. Like, he's still a rookie. He's executing at a higher level than we anticipate, or we could have anticipated, but that level is still not NFL veteran because he's played 2 games and I've dropped, you know, there's been like 10 snaps, 15 snaps of pure dropback. He doesn't have the mental bank of coverages and looks to be able to hit it right at a 80, 90% clip like guys that have been around for years do. And so if we want to get Terry the ball, instead of calling something where there's a chance if it gets read out right and they're playing the coverage that we think that he could get it, let's just give it to him. Let's just, whether it's a screen, a pop pass, an end around, you know, some kind of 3-by-1 where it's there's an option for Terry to get the ball no matter what as an isolated receiver. Like, there are things you can do to make sure your guy gets the ball, and I do think Cliff will lean a little bit more into that. Last but not least, good perspective, though, and I'm glad someone asked this question of the coordinators today. This is all within the context of a trend that's happening around the league. Anthony, if we could, number 6.
Number 6.
So there's actually a decrease in passing around the league in general. And Joe Witt was actually asked about this from a defensive side and why he thinks it's happening.
I mean, I really don't want to get into that, to be honest with you, but you can all start with the college game, if you want to say, because when you look back, when I first got in the league, you had quarterbacks that grew up in systems, and there was traditional learning where to send the ball and how to send it, and now everything goes so fast in college, so when they get up here, it takes them a little bit of time to learn where to send the ball in the progressions, and so, but I'm not really worried about that, man. I'm worried about stopping these Cincinnati Bengals. All right, so.
One guy that does that pretty well is Joe Burrow. So I get Joe not wanting to talk about it more. But I think the other part of it is the way the contracts work now. There's a lot more young players playing in the league. And, like, the guys like Geno Smith are so rare. A guy who doesn't work out when he's younger, or probably should have sat when he was younger and eventually is sat when he's younger, that works his way up and becomes kind of like the middle class of the NFL, that actually is pretty good. That, like, week in, week out, certainly is not Pat Mahomes, but, like, you can win with Geno Smith. And teams don't really sign guys like that unless they sign it exactly like Geno did. They sign him as a backup. He gets a chance to play, and all of a sudden, they're like, whoa, this guy can play. Like, we should make him our starter. And you kind of almost have to have the opportunity due to injury. Like, you have to luck into that in some way. You have to sign a guy as a backup, or, like, Tampa signs Baker to compete with Kyle Trask, the guy they hope wins the job as a young guy, and then Baker goes out and balls, and you're like, oh, okay, well, now we'll give you a decent contract. And because you don't have that middle class, like, the quarterbacking skill level is just lower because you have so many young dudes who are inexperienced playing, or the GOATs. And so week to week, you are facing Joe Burrow, Pat Mahomes, Josh Allen, etc., or you're facing some young guy who hasn't really played a whole lot. And the nature of how the contracts work and teams, you know, trying to be on that rookie quarterback timeline, which is so valuable, I think it's changed the dynamic in the NFL, as well as what Joe just talked about, as well as some of the way that teams are playing in coverage, which is the part I'm sure he doesn't want to talk about, etc., etc. It's the Hoffman Show. That's our pick six. Six big headlines every single day at 6 o'clock around the Commanders. You can check them out live on the radio, of course, at 6. Or if you happen to miss it on any given day, make sure you check it out on demand in the Hoffman Show podcast. When we get back, a quick weekend preview, and then we get up on out of here on a Friday.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Streaming live on YouTube, too, at the Team 980. Quick weekend preview before we get up on out of here in about 20 minutes or so. BetMGM tonight next. Or Anthony, tonight's a Terps Talk night, isn't it? You got that wacky, long, long final segment?
It is indeed.
Keep us. The man is trying to keep us down.
Yes.
But you don't know what that means.
We have a longer real things.
It means we have lots of time for real things, which yes. I'm actually kind of excited about because I feel like we've been shorting real things lately.
Yep.
So that's, slightly. That's on us. That's on us. We've been getting really excited about other stuff. There's so much to talk about. It's football season.
It's too much.
And playoff season. And, well, hey, looks like it's a weekend preview time. We could tell everybody everything that's happening. Let's get to it, Anthony. College football slate starts tonight with our alma mater, Syracuse Stanford. Pop quiz. Is this a conference matchup?
Oh, hold on. that is a great question. No.
I believe it is.
It is.
Oh. This is an ACC matchup tonight,
this
right?
This is crazy. Let's take a look.
The point is, we cover sports for a living. This is our alma mater, and we don't know.
ACC?
Something is broken.
Wow. Is Stanford?
Stanford's in the ACC now, right? I didn't make that up.
Oh, you're actually, you're right.
Yeah, Stanford, 1-1 on the year. First AC. This is Syracuse is welcoming Stanford to the ACC tonight. This is Stanford's ever first ACC game. That famous school from Palo Alto, California, in the Atlantic Coast Conference.
Wow. Makes no sense to me, but I'm excited for the game.
I am too. By the way, I was today years old when I found out that we have Aronde Gadsden the second at tight end. Because I remember watching Aronde Gadsden at the time. It's just Aronde Gadsden. I guess he's probably senior now. Or the first.
Oh, I don't even know who the first is. I know who the second is. He's a converted tight end from wide receiver. He's nasty, though. I've been on.
Big fella.
This guy. 2 years. Well, last year he was hurt, but.
Yeah, I actually do think I remember that he played last year. Yeah, but Aronde Gadsden was a wide receiver who played for the Cowboys and the Dolphins back in the day. He also played for the Frankfurt Galaxy of the World League of American Football and the Portland Forest Dragons of the Arena Football League.
You learn something new every day.
Yeah.
Every day.
But now his son is the number one thing that you get in the Google results. And he's playing for Syracuse tonight against Stanford in an ACC conference game. Because we live in college football hell. Tennessee, Oklahoma. Doug, is this a conference game, Anthony?
Man. Is it a conference game? Great question. To be honest, if Syracuse is playing Stanford tonight, maybe all the teams are finally in conference play. I'm going to say yeah.
Yeah, it's an SEC game because Oklahoma and Texas are in the SEC now.
I don't know where none of these teams are. Yeah. We need to play that game again also. Because
yeah, we could have Denton back to play what conference
are these gosh. Teams
in anytime. Sure. We'll get a bunch of them wrong. But Tennessee and Oklahoma are playing a conference game. But Tennessee is having a heck of a season so far, and they've actually received a lot of love nationally, Anthony, for how they've handled NIL. Not necessarily that everyone's like, oh, look at the morality of it. The way I said that kind of set that up. No, like, they were smarter than everyone else. They had money ready in funds and, like, smart ways to distribute it, and they've done a really good job recruiting in the new the new universe that we live in, where Oklahoma's in the SEC. And so first, you know, huge, huge test for them this season will be as they go on the road at Oklahoma, number 15 team in the country, tomorrow night at 7:30.
Yeah, that's going to be a hell of a game. James Pierce, arguably one of the top defensive players. He's on that defensive line. So I play NCAA, Craig. And that is one of my favorite teams to use. Tennessee, because of that guy. But also, I like their quarterback. He's really athletic. They got some wide receivers. This is going to be a crazy game tomorrow night. Crazy.
Colorado playing its first Big 12 game in forever. Of course, they left the Big 12 for the Pac-12, and then it was the Pac no more. They packed up and went home.
Yeah.
What did there, Anthony?
Yeah.
So Colorado on the road at Baylor tomorrow night. I feel like there's a lot of pressure on that Colorado program right now. I think the pressure is going to crank up way more after this year when Shador and Hunter leave. But for right now, like, they've talked a lot. Everyone's like, oh, they got these great players. But I think there's a lot of questions. And so they get into conference play. It's got to go better for Dion than it did last year. Not only, like, you know, it's one thing to, like, hey, keep your job, be in the spotlight, whatever. But, like, you know, if you want to continue to grow your program, there's just a lot. Like, the tide is turning on Dion, and not in the way that some people thought it would last year in terms of, like, narrative. Substantively, I think people are like, oh, they got real football problems. And I don't know if I want to be a part of that program if they got football problems, if I'm a player in the recruiting world. So I think this is a huge stretch of games for Deion here getting started in Big 12 play.
Yeah, I think every game is going to be huge for them. Every game, they're in prime time. Like, who would have thought two unranked teams, Colorado, Baylor, 8 p.m., getting, you know, this slot. So I just think as long as they continue to deliver, because I looked up their who they play next week and what time they play, and everything just says TBD, TBD, TBD.
That's the nature of college football, though, for the most part.
Yeah, but I think when it comes to just like Colorado and in general, they want everybody to see them. So,
yeah.
They got to win, though. They got to win.
Lastly, in the weekend preview, other local action. Spirit are in action tonight. They've already clinched a playoff spot, but they are facing a team that they could certainly see in the playoffs tonight. Kansas City Current down to fourth in the NWSL table. They were in second most of the year. They've now been leapfrogged by the Spirit and defending champion Gotham. Last time these two teams played, Anthony, the Spirit absolutely whipped him. It was 4-1. Just a thoroughly dominant performance. So should be fun to watch that one tonight, 8 o'clock on Amazon Prime.
I wasn't there, was I?
I don't believe you were there for that one.
Okay, just making sure, because I don't think I've had the chance to witness the Spirit win a game.
Yeah, we can.
We need to rectify that.
Yeah, there's a couple more home games this year, although I will say they're not particularly well-timed for those of us that have to work or watch football. So like I might miss some games. Also, when the Spirit get in the playoffs, there's a chance that I'm just gonna have to watch a Commanders game later, because I'm not missing playoff games, bro.
Yeah,
we're not doing that.
Playoffs.
It's playoffs. The Spirit are in action tonight. Of course, the Nats, they're wrapping up their season over the next couple of weeks. They lost today to the Cubs. And they will be back in action tomorrow at Chicago at 2:20 p.m. They are cruising a five-game losing streak. Got swept by the Mets. Lost the first two to the Cubs so far. Cubs, by the way, is trying to stay alive in the NL playoff picture. Staved off elimination with their win over the Nats today. That is our weekend preview brought to you by...
Nobody, Craig.
That is correct. The one thing we did leave out, the WNBA playoffs. If you want a full WNBA playoff preview, I recorded it today with my pal Lindsay D'Arcangelo on the Hoffman W Sports WNBA show. As you can search Hoffman W Sports wherever you get your pods. Anthony, what we did 4 minutes per series because there's four series. So we were like, every series, 4 minutes or less. And we tackled one other big topic which is why the hell is the WNBA having their big four-game opening playoff day on an NFL Sunday? What are we doing? Just an absolutely boneheaded marketing decision. Another one by this league. They can't get out of its own way. So we talked about that, and then we did, 16 minutes worth of preview. So you can check that out at Hoffman W Sports or search Hoffman Women's Sports in your favorite podcast app. But definitely something that I'll be locked into Sunday. Since the Commanders aren't playing, multi-screens, can throw the W on one of them or multiple of them. I'm gonna see how Sunday's gonna need a lot of screens, man. We got a lot of stuff happening.
I'm trying to think when the best time the WNBA could have actually started their playoffs.
Easy. Tuesday.
Yeah, Tuesday. But like what happens when you get to the weekends? Cause Saturday you got
I would rather go up against college football than the NFL
okay,
any
that's
day,
fair.
Anytime. Yeah. Not even remotely close. Two, like ESPN ABC is the home of the WNBA playoffs.
Yeah.
They have Monday Night Football doubleheader on Monday night.
Yep.
You go Tuesday and you promote the hell out of the playoffs on Monday night.
People
are into it. People want to watch. You just can't put it behind the things that they want to watch more. And the NFL is the thing that in this country sports fans want to watch most. It's simple. I know they want the TV windows because they want. Hey, we can get 3 o'clock on ABC on a Sunday and it'll get a million plus viewers. Like the game will do okay, but it would get 3 million if there wasn't an NFL Sunday.
Yeah.
So,
for sure.
Like for instance, the 3 o'clock game on ABC on Sunday is Caitlin Clark's first playoff game. By the way, they're taking on the Sun. That is going to be a bloodbath of a series and I cannot wait.
DeJanae, she got her work cut out for her.
She does. And she is not guarding the same Caitlin Clark she did when she dominated her early in the season. It's going to be a lot of fun, that series. But again, the previews in the W Sports podcast. When we get back, though, we got plenty of time, so we'll get to it. Real things, real people said into real microphones. It's the Hoffman Show on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Yes, we are looking forward to the weekend. Anthony is doing the most this weekend. I am doing the least, and we are both excited about that, respectively. Favorite part of the show today, Ant, real quick, that we can tell people, hey, check this out this weekend if you want some podcasting to listen to. Whoa, Anthony's got to fix his headphones. He got caught on the chair.
Favorite part.
Definitely wasn't one of those on the show today.
Well, not in your studio, so I'm joking.
Hey, you're there by yourself. I'm over here by myself. Whatever happens, happens, as long as it doesn't make the air.
My favorite part probably was, I'm going to have to go, I like our pick six today. I like Joe Witt. Even the beginning of the show, talking about the brand and style of football we want to play, and, you know, Joe Witt singling out those four players, I think that was my favorite part, just because we need more of that, and we need more dogs, man. We need them.
Yeah, well, they need the dudes to play like dogs. They need to get after it. Yeah. So good stuff. I thought Joe Witt was awesome today. Mm-hmm. I thought it was one of my favorite press conferences of his so far. I've enjoyed Cliff too. I actually really genuinely enjoy the coordinators, as opposed to last year where you got Bieniemy soliloquies and nothing from Del Rio.
Oh my gosh.
I've enjoyed hearing both guys talk this year. All right, let's get to it. We've got a bunch of great stuff, including the closest I've ever felt to Jim Nantz. And real things, real people said, into real microphones.
Real things.
We're not going to be sucked this year.
Real people.
5-11, not very good.
Said into real microphones.
You know, the culture is actually damn good.
But first, this clip made the rounds. Adrian Wojnarowski retired earlier this week, and it was like, hey, why did Woj retire? And Adam Schefter and Jeff Passan and... oh, God, who's the other one that was on there? There's another three of ESPN's top insiders joined Malika Andrews on NBA today. And Adam Schefter summed it up as best as he could, what their lives are like as insiders.
We talked about this, and basically he wanted his life back. Mm. You know, he didn't want to have to work on holidays. He didn't want to be away from more family gatherings. He didn't want to have to, as we had to do in the past, take a shower with your phone up against the shower door so you could see a text that's coming in, or take your phone with you to the urinal and hold it in one hand while you're trying to take care of your business in the other. That's the life that we live. And that was a life that he chose not to do any longer, because it takes over your life. You can't kind of do the job. You have to live the job. And he was done living the job. He wants to go live his life and work for his school and give back to younger athletes and help people beyond what he's done at the highest of high levels for however long he's done it. It's enough. He's had enough, and he gets to go out on his terms after he crushed it in free agency, after he crushed it during his career, and now he gets to do what he wants, which is exactly how it should be.
I mean, if that's the full story, I'm in. And do I think that's the entirety of the full story? There's some other stuff floating out there. Power struggles, you know, all the usual kind of stuff. But I will say, like, you can't... Schefter's right on, you can't kind of do that job. And I saw, like, a quote, a thing from Bill Simmons' pod going around where Simmons is like, oh, was he curing cancer? Or was he a ER nurse during COVID? And I'm like, oh, you can respect that it's a really hard job without, like, being an inhumane jerk about it. And so I thought that was super weak from Simmons, and felt much more personal, like maybe Bill knows something else. But the one question I have, Ant, is why do these guys not have Apple Watches? You don't need to smash your phone up to the shower. They make a watch. It'll tell you. Or this Garmin that I'm wearing. Like, all the smartwatches. You can get your alerts.
Craig, they're not millennials, though, man. We are. Like, we're
it's so easy. They can wear a watch.
I'm just saying it's easier for us to navigate technology than it is for those guys. That's all I'm saying.
I am sad, though, that we spent that long
on
that.
I know.
Now we don't have time to play the Nantz clip. Basically, Nantz was asked what the musts are for him at a football game, and he's like, at halftime, I have to have a hot dog. And I've never felt like Jim Nantz and I are more the same person than that. That's our show. We'll see you on Monday.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.